Welcome, Tana Frederick, to Upcoming Dis. And the movie we just recently saw was Ovation. And it seems to me that you work a lot with Henry Jaglom. Did I pronounce his name correctly?
Yes, you did, yes. Yeah, quite a few films now. I think it's seven films? Or I think it's seven, yeah. We are very copacetic in nature, and I really admire his work. And it was kind of kismet in the way that he filmed and the way that I don't know, we have a lot of creative fun together, and we've done quite a few films together, so.
Well, how was it that you guys first got together?
Well, actually, I was a young actress in Hollywood, and, you know, waiting tables at about seven different restaurants, and then I was in a play at the time, and one of the cast members from the play came in and said that they had done a film called Going Shopping, and that Henry cast liked it. They said, "It's the most brilliant director, the most amazing director he's ever met, and he's just a genius." And I said, "Okay, who is this guy, and how do I work with him?" You know, and you get used to hustling out here as a young actor, and
sure.
But not in a bad way. You're just trying to make a living. You know, I graduated like valedictorian of my college and at University of Iowa with an honors in political science and honors in theater. And then you come out to Los Angeles where those degrees don't even get you a waiting tables job, you know, a waitressing job. And, you know, you suddenly put down valedictorian at University of Iowa and they're like, "We don't care. That just means you're going to quit sooner than any other way, right?" So, you know, so it was hellish to get a job, and it was, so you just start to be like, okay, I'm just going to roll with the punches here. And so this actor said, "Listen, you're the perfect type of neurotic woman to be in his films, and I'm going to, you know, be an actor buddy to you, and I'm going to get you to, you need to watch this movie." He gave me Deja Vu, which was one of Henry's movies, and said, "Watch this movie. Get to him by tomorrow morning, because right now he's filming, and he had cast one of the current leads from a letter."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "If you tell him that you like your film, you're in, and especially if you're a woman." And so I was like, "Rad, okay. I work until 11:30 tonight, and then I'm gonna go home and watch the movie and write Henry Jaglom a letter, whoever this guy is." So I went home and I watched the opening credits for Deja Vu, and then was really tired because I had worked like double shifts all that week,
plus
rehearsals, and then ended up writing this very honors thesis letter about how brilliant Deja Vu was based on what I saw in the opening credits. And he ended up calling, and then I hand-delivered it to the office. Henry wasn't there, so I didn't meet him. And just thought, well, there, at least I tried.
Yeah.
Whatever. My friend pushed me, fine, whatever. And I'll never hear from this guy. And then he called me that day, or the next day, and said, "What did you mean by this? What does this letter mean? This is a brilliant letter." And he's very nice, but he's also very imposing. And just questioning, but luckily I got through this initial conversation with Henry without letting him know that I never actually saw the movie.
Right.
And somehow actored him into believing that I loved his films, and he was a genius. Now, I only say this because after I did this, I felt very guilty. Being a good Catholic girl, and
well, but it was your first acting job for him. I mean, you were delivering your first acting job for him.
Yes, exactly. And I watched every single one of them, every single film of his. I was actually working in the office for him during the next movie because I was making phone calls and checking in on Anouk Aimée and all of the stars in Festival in Cannes,
mm-hmm.
and working as an office girl because he and I had a friendship for a year and a half where he had never seen my work, and I had seen all of his work, but sure. I just was like, whatever, you know, and he was a good friend. We really collaboratively had the same taste in films and subject matter, and so he gave me a job in the office, and I would run around town and, like, ask shops to put up his posters of Festival in Cannes, tape them in there, you know, and you know, it was very sweet, and he's a very, very sweet person, yeah. As you can see in his films, to the sort of, I don't know what to say, but the difficulties of being an actor and the plight of being an actor. So he's very understanding, and he's always been lovely at hiring. And I've seen this now that I've worked with him so much, but he's always hired actors and had a soft heart for actors. He's very much an actor's director.
Mm-hmm.
So he was so kind to me, and eventually saw my work, and then he gave me a scene from, or he gave me his play, A Safe Place, which he had made as his first movie in 1968 with Tuesday Weld and Jack Nicholson and Philip Foster and Orson Welles. And he said, here, take this and do it for class, you know. And again, he hadn't seen my work yet.
Right.
And I said, well, hey, you know, being the advantageous Ireland that I was, I said, hey, if I get this produced in a theater, I said, this is your first play, right? And I was, whatever, 22. This is your first play, right? And he's like, yeah. And I said, well, okay, if I can get this produced in a theater, can I, you know, what kind of rights will I have to pay on this? And he said, no rights, you just take it and do it. And I know that he never thought in a million years that I would get it produced in a theater, but that's the kind of person I am. So I went around to 30 different theaters, tried to raise the money for it, and finally got a theater to back me financially for A Safe Place, which is a beautiful, beautiful play. And the movie was heralded by Nance Nin, and it was very contentious. But it's very different. The movie's very different from his original from the original script that he showed to Harold Klerman and workshopped with Lee Strasberg at the Actors Studio. And so I put it on. I found the theater, put it on, starred myself in it. It was the only way I could get him to actually see my work was doing his work, and that's fair enough. I was like, fair enough.
Well, it's clever.
So he ended up coming to pretty much every single performance.
Wow.
It was scariest theatrical experience I've ever had in my life, but I'm very thankful for it. He would come back between act one and two and say, act one is off, completely off, and then I would go into the bathroom, cry silently, and then come out, and he would be like, act two was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. I have no idea how to be an actor. I just don't know what I'm doing. And this would be like in succession, like for you know, weeks. And he would be like, "No, act two was terrible, terrible." And he wasn't even the director, you know. He's
right.
A playwright. And also Henry's very well known for being kind of the king of whatever mumblecore is. But the whole Woody Allen style of, you know, getting the script and then going to set and then coming up with something off on set that's not written, but is around the, you know, the flavor of what the scene is about.
Sure.
But with his play, if I messed up an A or an and, I was thrashed. I was majorly thrashed. And I was like, wait, is this guy supposed to be like the most, like, liberal sort of filmmaker when it comes to dialogue?
Right.
What kind of hell am I living in? And he would take notes every single night for 8 months for the run of the play. So I guess I kind of started, like, under walking across the coals, because after that, doing his films was so easy. Because doing a play with Henry was not easy at all. So he ended up coming for 8 months and watching this, and while during that 8 months we developed Hollywood Dreams, which we kind of based on my stories of all my friends that I would give him because I was a struggling actress.
Right.
He loves the story of struggling actress. He loves the glory of that. He's passionate about that. And some of his favorite films are Star is Born and are all about the film Stage Door from the Freeze. He just loves those stories. And he makes stories about films about show business and about women. So it was, so we started to develop this film, and before you know it, I'm on set with, I couldn't believe it was Karen Black. And
sure.
Karen has been and will forever be one of my best friends and one of the most inspirational people in my life. And Zach Norman, David Koloff from Sopranos, Justin Kirk,
yeah.
All these, Eric Roberts. Well, I was just coming out of the gate. I was, I think I was so terrified of him.
Well, but you know what? He obviously saw. Yeah, but he obviously saw, as much as you're talking so graciously about him, he obviously saw something in you. That's why he came all those weeks. It wasn't just to see the same play. I mean, you know, you have to know that.
Yes. I think I held my own. I do.
And obviously.
Thank you for saying that. Yes. And so, yeah, because by the time that I got on the set and we had collaborated on Hollywood Dreams together, I was just, I was so focused on the film itself and where the, you know, it wasn't like, I wasn't scared. It was sort of the whole, once you've paid your dues, you stop apologizing kind of thing.
Sure.
Because I wasn't scared being in scene with Karen. I worked so hard for a year, for years, actually. There's no overnight sensation in Hollywood that I know of. I wish there was, but I had worked with this man for 4 years and really carved out a place in his world and his respect as an artist, and he had gotten my respect as an artist, and so by the time I got on set, I was just focused on our first film together.
Yeah, it goes both ways.
It being good.
Yeah, it absolutely goes both ways. I tell you, it's funny you talk about being scared and being around Karen Black. I have to tell you, I love horror movies, and the only horror movie that ever scared me was a Karen Black made-for-television film back in the 70s when I was a kid. It was something called Trilogy of Terror, and there's a third piece in there. And it was the only thing that has ever scared me in my entire life of any horror movie I've seen. So that's...
Was that Robert Clemens' film?
I think it was... I know Richard Matheson wrote it. And she played three different parts in an anthology, and the third one was about this little tiki doll, and it was scary as heck. So,
Karen would love hearing that, and be so honored to hear that. And she unfortunately passed away years ago. Yeah, she's a woman who lived her life to its fullest, and I was really lucky to be.
Yeah.
To help her husband plan with her. We didn't do a memorial service. We actually did the celebration of her life, where it was just intended to be not a memorial service, but Alan Cummins showed up, sang a song about a cheeseburger from his cell phone. Everything was just crazy, Karen, because she wouldn't have wanted people to mourn for her. I did a scene from her one-woman show with Judd Nelson. I don't know. It was completely bizarre. Like all these stars talking about different things with Karen, but it was joyful and there was so much laughter and it was glorious. It was seriously beautifully celebrating somebody's life. And it was really cool. Yeah. So she's been an amazing influence in my life.
Yeah.
And she's so, because she just does that. I mean, she just went all the way, 150%, even in life, after having a conversation with her, you couldn't walk away without your mind being blown, and you can see she just threw herself in everything.
Yeah.
And that's what was...
Well, it sounds like you do as well. It sounds like you really throw yourself into what you do as well. I mean, you can really hear the passion in when you're talking about these things.
Oh, thank you. Well, I've been exposed, luckily, to really good teachers like her, or not even teachers. I think at this point, it's they always presented themselves, like a lot of the people who I've worked with have presented themselves as friends, and we're all, say have gone through career highs and lows, but they talk to me about them, and they never have presented a sort of, like, I'm greater than you.
Right.
Because I've done 58 films, and you haven't. They've always just been like, okay, so let's just get down to brass tacks.
Right.
My life, this is who I am now. I've been through everything you've been through, and I'm, you know, I...
And you earned your place to where you are. I mean, that's...
Yeah, yeah. And so everybody's been so cool.
That's really
special and really neat. It's a very humbling occupation.
Yeah, I'll bet.
World of theater. I don't know if I would feel the same way if I were a dentist. You probably would have a little more of my self-esteem intact.
Yeah. Now, it's, you know, you do a lot of live theater, sounds like. Do you like that more, or do you like film better? Which if you had your preference and you could only do one, which one would you do?
That depends on the year and the place in my life that you ask me that. I mean, right now I'm doing this amazingly, it's a very profoundly, amazingly painful piece.
Uh-huh.
That's very truthful. It's called Jack and Jill. It sounds trite, but...
And this is theater.
This is theater, yep, okay. And it's written by Jane Martin, which is actually the pen name for John Jory, who wrote Keeley and Do.
Yeah.
And he wrote this, I think, with his wife, so it's a two-person show, and it just explores all of the sexual politics and gender politics of what has happened, and it was written in the 80s, so the fact that it holds true and still all these people are very... are reacting to it, and it's sort of in your face. It's very in their face, and it's not. I mean, it's coupled throughout 10 years of their lives and what they go through.
Wow.
And getting a divorce, and then eventually, like, trying to keep working it out, and just the loveliness of trying to make it work out, which is incredibly painful to any couple.
Sure.
But the loveliness and the wantingness of being known to somebody and being seen and letting somebody know, like, all of your baggage and all of your BS, and, you know, so it's what most people who have been, you know, married for however many years have gone through, even if or not married or whatever, any couple. And so a lot of people flinch, you know, when they see it, but it's very real. But the pieces. I wouldn't trade anything for doing live theater. I wouldn't trade a thing, because there's no better training, and there's really no better high than you can get from sort of sharing a one-time performance with an audience. I mean, really, as I've gotten older, I've learned to really appreciate people paying for a ticket. People just coming for, you know, on a comp ticket and just being willing to sit in the audience and interact with you as an actor and being open to it.
I can relate to that. I'm a musician, so it's the kind of the same thing. We have the same thing when you're up there on a stage. It's a different kind of performance, but I certainly understand when you've got people captivated to give of their time and their patience and their attention. It's a kick.
Exactly. Like, I mean, because, you know, sometimes people probably... you know, snap, and then sometimes people probably get to their feet and walk out with you.
Sure.
And, I mean, it all depends on the audience, and you can't fault them for either reaction.
No.
But the whole point is, you came and you were willing to ingest my flavor of art, and thank you for doing that. Thank you so much for doing that.
It's such a high, so I understand. I don't understand why musicians take drugs, because there isn't a bigger high I think you can get than being on a stage. So I'm with you.
Yes, completely. And there's it's never the same, and it's never captured.
Right.
And it's just so we're talking the same language here.
Yeah.
Just that there are times that I hope that you understand when I say this, and I'm sure you will. There are times that sometimes it feels like, okay, this would be so much easier if I was, like, starring in The Revenant and just had to do this a one-off for the camera. Not that they didn't rehearse.
Mm-hmm.
They did in that film rehearse all day. But, you know, when you do year-long runs of shows and theater, and then you do film, and you're like, okay, I have no idea how I just did in those last 18 takes.
Right.
I know one of them's going to work, and one of them's going to be on film forever.
Right.
And there's a certain relaxed knowingness to that that you can take away with you.
Yeah.
And just be like, okay, that's captured. I got that. I mean, I'm sure it's the same with music. You're like, okay,
yeah.
There's my first EP or whatever, and,
right.
And I'm good now.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely understand that. I absolutely understand that. And I can see that even in watching like this film Ovation, I can kind of see that because that film seems to me like a play. I mean, I know it kind of takes place backstage of a performance, but it comes across to me very much. It seems to be staged very much like a play. It seems to be, you know, it has the same kind of nuances of a play. And I got to wonder if that love for the theater is what attracts you to that kind of work.
Absolutely. I mean, that was also a great conceit of Henry's was, we ran The Rainmaker. There's a great cast, first of all.
Yeah.
I mean, Robert Stanley,
mm-hmm.
James Denton, Steve Howard, everybody was amazing in that cast. The reason that we were all in love with each other because we had gotten... doing theater to standing ovations every single night was the coolest thing I've ever experienced.
Sure it is.
And that just doesn't happen. I'm sure you get it with like a particular song
right.
or whatever, but you're like, holy cow, I gotta capitalize on this. So you just keep running the darn show. You just like, mm-hmm. you can't stop. Too good, we're in the groove, and all the cast loves each other, and it was a great play. So we were critically acclaimed. We were running in Los Angeles
yeah.
for a year, which is like 7 years.
Wow!
I always compare.
It's a good run.
New York. It's a great run for LA. I think a year.
Yeah.
And I always say in dog years, that's like being in New York for 7 years because it's so difficult to keep up in Los Angeles.
Right.
So I'm always like, it was a 7 year run, pretty much. If you want to. Kind of throw it out there, but no, it was an exceptionally long run for Los Angeles, and then Henry came to a lot of the shows, and then his whole conceit was let's show, he wanted to do this for a long time, show what's behind the scenes,
which sure.
is always more dramatic than what's going on stage, the backstage version of everything, so he said the next film is going to be about all the actors and what's going on backstage, you hear the cue line, you're the monitor, but you never actually see what's going on stage. You just see everything that's going on backstage. Mm-hmm. So we kept this brilliant cast, and we all had that bond. It was after we were almost at closing, I think, when we filmed, and none of us wanted to leave each other. None of us, we were all like complete compadres through thick and thin. And so it turned out a lot of that stuff was just, and again, that's just a very smart, part of Henry's genius is human nature and knowing human nature.
Mm-hmm.
So when you got something good, why not just get it? He had the theater, he had the set, he had the actors, he had the costumes, and so he just made the story around the whole thing, and then he had us all right there in the palm of his hand, and it was, and that's the cool thing that he's able to do.
Yeah.
Not being in a studio system and having shunned the studio system his whole life,
right.
He just said, this is what I'm going to do, this is how it's going to be, and I believe in it, and nobody else has to, and it's either going to work or not work, but I don't care because it's my way or the highway, which is also a really neat thing to have worked with him and as an artist and seen that sort
right.
of
mm-hmm.
bravery and adherence to sort of artistic, ethical belief, you know?
Well, and it's brave, too, because there's no shtick here going on. You don't have anything to lean on. You don't have visual effects. You don't have, you know, big guests, you know, stars coming in just for a second. You don't have anything really to lean on except for the people in this limited environment. It's very difficult to do that well.
Exactly. And you don't have car chases. You don't have, you know, I just finished producing a VR narrative, 12 episodes that went, uh-huh. very good. And it was with you know, all this new virtual reality stuff. It was very interesting, and I'm very proud to be the producer, and I've started it with Harry Hamlin and Carl Weathers, and Randall Kleiser directed it from Greece. But again, that stuff is very easy to sell, because if you got the right techies behind you,
uh-huh.
amazingly simple. It's virtual reality.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a gimmick, I want to say, and I don't want to put down what we did, because I think that there's a lot of virtual reality out there that's just a flash in the pan kind
right.
of firecracker thing, and we had a really great narrative going on
yeah.
and a great sort of empathetic response from, but to do what Henry does and really focus on conversations.
Yes.
The conversations out there, people either love your films or they hate your films.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know. That's his style. Yeah. That's what he digs. He's like, you get me or you don't.
Right. Well, when you do this and you do these things, especially you know my experience here with Ovation, do you guys film that linearly like you would a play, or do you do it like typical movie where you're filming just you know various spots, taking advantage of where you're at in the set? It struck me that it flowed better, so I kind of almost got the impression you guys were playing it out.
That's really interesting. I think that's really interesting. I know that some of Henry's films. Because I've done them, and I know that even before I came along, New Year's Day, for example, was
yeah.
just written on an 8x11 sheet of paper,
mm-hmm.
and that was the film was made completely just off that.
Right.
And then I know that this film, Ovation, had 130 pages, and that. Henry's formula works very well with a lot of TV actors, which we were lucky to have a lot of great television actors populating Ovation as well. And so they adhered to the premise of the script and then were able to create their own logical arc within the story, which really, really helps in this sort of guerrilla style filmmaking. But I think it was more disciplined. We filmed it as a film. As any film that
right.
I've shot with him or any film that I've shot where it's the last scene was like in the first day.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how most films are done.
It was very traditional. It is one of his more linear films, I think.
Yeah.
And probably because he also wrote it with Ron Vignoni,
mm-hmm.
Co-wrote it, and Ron comes from a more from a USC background where he's got yeah. story covered and
yeah.
Narrative covered, and so you know Henry's smart when he finds people that work to balance him out. He'll pick them up
yeah.
on the team. Not a lot, but a very few amount of people. But you know,
almost like a troop.
What was that?
He almost
yeah.
become like
yeah.
a troop.
Like he calls it his, as we called it in Hollywood Dreams, his stable of
yeah.
actors and writers and his team. So,
yeah,
which is really very, again, like Cassavetes or
yeah.
Altman or, again, I don't know how often Woody Allen uses the same crew over
right.
and the same... But he uses the same actors
mm-hmm.
quite a bit, and he uses the same formula quite a bit. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and that
yeah.
especially pertains with Henry's films. He's very smart in utilizing people and utilizing some sort of system so that once you get on set as an actor, you can kind of go anywhere because you
right.
know that everything else is contained. It's not some madhouse.
Yeah.
He's very strict
sure.
on set, very strict. And the crew has to be very complacent, and it is an actor's. His sets are actors' vehicles
mm-hmm.
to explore and create from. But you have to. I mean, but the actors are all very, very good. That's the one thing I've always admired is in Henry Stones, when I first met him, the caliber of actors that he's chosen and the people who he starred in his films. I mean, he discovered Coveney. Right. He starred Maggie Jacobson, who got her claim to fame was playing, what's the character's name in Friends? The Chandler Bing character, that very, I'm forgetting her name right now.
Oh, okay.
But she became very famous from doing that very neatly, Chandler Bing.
Right.
And Maggie Jacobson was his star, and he starred her in New Year's Day, and she was a brilliant actress.
Wow.
And there's a lot of films like that that he just found people and put them in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And helped edit Easy Rider, Jack, and Jack Nicholson helped, brought him on board, and so did Dennis Hopper, and had him edit that, and he found, he was put in charge of editing all of Jack Nicholson's stuff then.
Very nice.
And so Jack was just mad that he was an Easy Rider because he had to get a haircut for it. all these great stories, you know, that it could be found in,
wow.
Peter Biskin, for example, Peter Biskin's books, like Easy Riders, Raging Bulls, all this beautiful, fascinating, messy history of Hollywood in the 70s, you know, is what he came from. And it's just like, piece it together and make it happen. And,
right.
And so it's really neat to have been privy to all these stories and how things have come about and how things have in that part of Hollywood where things are just very rich and loose, yet at the same time I don't know, it was just an era. It was a beautiful, I think it was a fascinating era in Hollywood, the whole BBC era with all those guys hanging out together, and most of them were just smoking weed and thought that, you know, it was a really good idea to have a 5-hour-long movie about motorcycle rides.
Yeah, really.
And he was like the only straight guy there. He didn't smoke pot, so he walked in, he saw the 5-hour motorcycle rides, and all those guys were like, yeah, man, this is great. And he's like, this is so boring. Like, okay, good, you cut it.
Yeah. So what's next for you? What are you going to be up to now?
I'm running the play, and Ovation is coming out. I'm going to Palm Beach, I think, in 2 weeks. We're going back for the play. Also, the D-Flash that I produced, we've gone to Sundance, and that was very exciting.
Great.
I'm just learning about being a woman in the whole VFX world and the virtual reality and augmented reality world. It's and producing and trying to stay on top of this emerging new way of storytelling,
which is
fascinating as an artist and compelling and very, very, very challenging. It's just crazy, but it keeps me interested, so that's good. And then we also go to like we've been invited to Cannes, so
wonderful.
A lot of business with that and figuring out how to monetize virtual reality, which people just nobody's done.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what really. It's just such an uncharted world, the world of VR. So trying to figure out how to make money and get an app made just filming more films and Henry's and then I have another film with Henry coming out called Train to Zakopane, which is written about his father.
Yeah.
And it's about anti-Semitism, and I play an anti-Semitic Polish nurse in it, and it's a true story, and that's being in post right now. So a lot of interesting work, I guess.
Well, it sounds like you keep yourself very, very busy, and we're just so honored that you took the time to spend some of it with us. I mean, that's really incredible, and I'm very grateful.
Thank you. magazine so much. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate your questions, too, with you being a musician and asking such awful questions and getting the glory and the frustration of the never-ending divine dissatisfaction of being an artist and the need to always go out there and figure out what life is about.
I absolutely understand. Absolutely understand. And I do my own material, too, so it's kind of neat when I'm on stage and there might be eight musicians all together creating something that once existed only in my head. I mean, that's a kick. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that.
That's a magical part. I mean, it just can never be recreated again. And
yeah.
I remember out here I saw, the first month I was out here in waiting tables, and my friend's boyfriend worked at B.B. King's, and I just found out, she said, hey, do you want to come to B.B. King? Eric Clapton and B.B. King are playing together.
Oh, wow. I would have liked to have seen that.
Riffed all night, and I wasn't a huge Clapton fan, or B.B. King fan for that matter, but respected. But I got to be a part of the two of them just jamming at a private concert, with
I'm jealous.
150 people there, if that.
Yeah.
And it's just a moment in time ended there and will never ever happen again. And that's the magic of live.
Well, yeah, I'm jealous.
Live theater is just it doesn't get any better. But at the same time, man, if cell phones were popular then and I had that down, I would have played it back for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's true.
The whole catch-22 of, wow, is this, is live art better? The unattainable better, or is it, do you want to capture? Nowadays you can capture anything.
Sure.
But I think we still, artists with live work that isn't captured still hold that magic check.
Yeah.
We've done something in time that will never happen again.
Yeah.
And that's cool stuff.
It absolutely is.
On stage.
Yeah, if you ever bring your any of your plays to Tampa, you'll have to let me know, and I'll have to come along and check it out. I'd love to see you live.
I will, and if you ever hear of a theater out there that wants a very contentious piece about marriage, let me know.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I've taken way too much of your time, and I'm very grateful for it. So. I'll let you go here, but I just am absolutely thrilled that we finally got together. I'm looking forward to meeting Eugenio.
And you too. And I get out to Tampa to do which is my favorite place to vacation, and there's NBC morning talk show there with each movie. So I hope to see you and give you a big hug when I come out there with Ovation.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that would be great. And hopefully see you live on stage and get to jam out with you, or listen to you jam out and support your work.
Well, thank you very much, and you take care, and good luck with all this stuff out there. I think that you're just, probably one of the hardest working actresses I've spoken to in a long time, so keep it up.
Oh, thank you. That means the world to me. Really, it does. Thank you so much.